Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net, joined remotely yet again by my tickled pink co-host, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. Hey, Charlie, is it time to get this party started?
I'll take co-star. I'm a co-headliner. I'm not the headliner. There's two of us on this stage. Thank you for the setup. I think you're referring to one of the films we saw this week. And I went out today and I got a beer to coincide. Remember how we used to do alcohol connections? I went to the store and I got Invisible Pink Unicorn. It's an IPA, 7%, from Checker Spot Brewing Company from Baltimore.
Yeah. And
man, I'm glad I've squeezed in movies this week, because I've been watching sports, Hannah, all week. Your Washington Capitals are in the hockey playoffs playing the Boston Bruins. They're down 2-1 in the series, but they're playing right now. I've got the TV off in respect to this whole process, but just know that I know there's hockey on right now. And your Washington Wizards made the playoffs. They are the 8th seed. They're going to play the Philadelphia 76ers, but they're in the playoffs. So I've been so busy watching sports that I only saw 3 movies this week.
I think these are your teams. Honestly, I don't think I've ever been to a Wizards game. I used to go to a couple of Caps games, and I really look forward to going back to some Nationals games and some Orioles games. So those are my allegiances.
And you could knock that out this weekend, because the Nationals are playing the Orioles as we speak.
That's right.
Now. It's on the television.
So what are we doing? What are we doing this podcast? Maybe because we watched the movies this week and we just want to kind of justify it. So what did we watch this week, Charlie?
Well, let's start with a genre we've had a lot of lately, a musical documentary. This is Pink, All I Know So Far. And if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, you can go right now on Amazon Prime Video and watch Pink on her 2019 Beautiful Trauma tour. She came through Washington, D.C. that year. On this tour, I did not go, but some of my coworkers went and they had a blast. And this is a documentary of the European leg of that global international tour, where she's selling out stadiums. She's selling out arenas. And in Europe, she's selling out the football arenas, which means Wembley Stadium, the largest stadium in England, the second largest arena in Europe. Not just anybody can do that. You know, Michael Jackson can do that. So, and Pink can do that. Who knew? She's a mother. I did not know that. She has 2 kids, and they're a little bit further apart. They were 8 and 2 in this film, and she had to make a choice. I have to go around the globe, and I'm a mother. What do I do? She brought them. She brought her husband and 2 kids with her on tour all through Europe. And this is a countdown documentary. So we got, you know, 20 days to Wembley, 15, 10 days to Wembley. And we see, you know, show after show and kid drama and life drama. And then I thought, wow, how intrepid of Pink to do this. Alicia Beth Moore, how intrepid. It must be so hard. And then I saw the private plane. Okay, so she doesn't have to do family boarding between groups A and B. She doesn't have to lug the stroller. She said she limited her family to 24 suitcases. Okay, maybe there's a nanny off screen. I don't know. If there's not, it's still really hard because she's busy. She's got acrobatics training. She's got to fly across the arena. She's got the staff of 225 people and co-stars on stage and singing. She's busy, but she's got her family. So it's actually a very enjoyable documentary for me. I already like the music. I don't love it. I like it. She's rock and roll. She's known as kind of a badass. So I dug it. It's better than the J Balvin, the boy from Medellin. And it's up there. It's tied with, maybe a little bit less with, tied with the Billie Eilish documentary that's currently out on Apple TV Plus. Hannah, I'm all for Pink. What did you think of Pink?
Yeah, I'm glad they started out with a snippet of performance where she is out there on stage singing, you know, time to get this party started. Because then I went, oh, wait, okay, I do actually know some Pink music. Like, I really wasn't sure going into this documentary whether I would recognize some of these songs. And in fact, I did. And I think the documentary does what it set out to do, which is simply to make Pink more relatable. Even, you know, as a working mom, somebody juggling family and her job and her husband and, you know, the whole shebang. Only she's doing it from a hotel suite overlooking the canals of Amsterdam. You know, we don't all get that kind of lodging when we're going on a family trip.
You don't?
But no, you know, Motel 6, baby. But, you know, I enjoyed it. I think you still need to sort of be in that wheelhouse of that genre of music to some degree. Like you kind of need to like the pop star kind of music and productions that that she does. And if you are a fan of Pink, you're going to really, really love this documentary, I think, because it gives you that that relatable part of her, that behind the scenes. And even if you aren't a huge fan, but you are a fan of music documentaries, I still think you can't really go too wrong with this one. And her husband, Cary Hart, scores huge points. He's like a former or a professional motorcycle racer. And he's, you know, he's there as sort of Mr. Mom during parts of this to kind of take on watching daughter Willow Sage and son Jameson Moon. I love those names. As, you know, as they're kind of out and about, you know, rolling around the stage while mom's practicing in rehearsal. So, you know, it was all about, she reveals some of her insecurities. I do recall seeing recently some stuff about Pink and her kids. And I guess she's considered sort of one of those, you know, unapologetic, nonconformist types that, you know, wants her kids to embrace freedom of expression and all of that. And so you can see where her parenthood skills and her her beliefs and her insecurities about whether she's doing right by her kids. I think a lot of parents can relate to all of that. And so, you know, I think all I know, I think it's all I know, comma, so far, is how it's meant to be read, is a very decent documentary, similar to Boy from Medellin, but without that like heavy forced political messaging that was in that one. This one is really just more of your, you know, come hang out with me and the fam while I'm getting ready for this really huge concert that I'm about to put on.
Directed by Michael Gracey. He directed a musical. You know it. You probably saw it. The Greatest Showman. Remember Hugh Jackman as P.T. Barnum? He worked with Pink on that film. He wanted a song from her. And they just got along so well creatively, and they respected each other's work as creative artists. So when she had the idea to have someone make a documentary about this journey of hers, she wanted Michael to do it. And he, you know, he has her, you know, look at the screen and some, yeah, and like read me your most personal fan letters or emails, or, you know, when that happens, when she goes full monologue, he goes like black and white. Okay, we're going to make this serious now. And I did not know that. I knew she was very popular. I knew very popular. I remember when she came on the scene in 2001, she was an R&B artist. That was her label, LaFace Label Records. Said, you're going to be an R&B artist. And I totally remember that. And then when she switched later on, you know, she started writing about her life. I had trouble as an adolescent. I've had trouble with my husband. You know, she was very personal and open about that. And she has these legions of devoted followers, especially in the LGBT community, I did not know about. And people who just recognize when an artist writes personal songs, they will gain a following. That's kind of like how Billie Eilish is growing that following right now. But the difference between the two of them is Billie Eilish is still learning who she is. Where does she fit? Pink already knows that. Pink knows exactly who she is. She has to worry about two other people who don't know who they are. They just happen to be 2 and 8 years old, respectively. So, I liked this more as the credits were rolling than I thought I would. Going into it, I was like, oh, great, another musical documentary. I like some Pink songs. Let's watch her dance around or read it to her. But no, it gets a little bit deeper. It's still relatively shallow. I mean, they don't get into it.
But no, it's controlled. The narrative is most definitely controlled by Pink. So while I think Michael Gracie is a great benefit in terms of the production value and showcasing her as a performer, I think that's where his skill set really comes in. But she makes no qualms about the fact she's the boss. And she is revealing what she wants to reveal. And so I definitely believe that she had firm control. She's an executive producer on this too. So I'm convinced that she had firm control over this narrative. And so she knew what she was giving her fans and the audience and what she was not. And so you kind of need to sort of take that with, you know, take that all into account when you're watching, that this is what she wants you to see. And he's just kind of helping to put it together in a way that is very entertaining. And it's, you know, your sort of crowd pleaser of a music documentary.
Well, our next film is also a documentary, and it was 10 years in the making. The director started in 2008 interviewing people for a final account. Hannah, what is this a final account of?
It is a final account of people who participated in Adolf Hitler's Third Reich. You are seeing the ones that really bought into the cult of personality, who became the Nazis, and the ones who were really just the last former SS members who this guy could track down and talk to and try and find out from them, you know, really, what were you thinking? What was happening? Is there remorse? What did people in the towns really know and not know? So it's you know, in a lot of German throughout most of it. It's really, they call it, it's the past speaking to the present. And it does raise some very timely questions about authority and conformity and complicity, but in national identity, unfortunately, it does all of that in a not so great way. So whereas I appreciate what Final Account was going for, there is a problem when you film 300 people over 10 years, and then you try to put that together into a 2-hour or an hour and a half documentary with all these elderly perpetrators and witnesses speaking from the Nazi perspective, from the Nazi side of things. So while we see a whole lot of documentaries over the years, you know, the last Holocaust survivors, to be able to get them on, you know, get their oral histories recorded. This was basically saying, I want to go and I want to find everyone that was on that other side of things, that were doing the perpetrating or were aware of what was happening. To me, it immediately brought to mind Jojo Rabbit and how we saw that satire. And this was like, these people were the real Jojo Rabbits. They were the real thing, but they're older, and the narrative, it just, the guy, unfortunately, the director has died. He died shortly after wrapping production of this film. And so, you know, it's really hard to know exactly whether the final cut of the final account was what he definitely envisioned. But it just unfortunately did not work for me. What about you?
Well, director Luke Holland did not even know he was Jewish. He did not know his maternal grandparents were murdered in a concentration camp until much later. His mom didn't tell him. She thought it was best to, I don't know, let sleeping dogs lie. And when he found out, his MO, his decision to come to terms with it, where he comes from, was to start interviewing people. And he was already a documentary filmmaker, so he's, all right, I'm going to turn this into a film. And he wanted to understand why. Why did you do this? Why did you choose to follow? And there is no thread. There's no narrative arc to all of these haphazard scattershot interviews. They disagree The SS were nowhere near the concentration camps. They were on the front line. Hitler would never waste them like that. Nobody knew what was going on with the Druze. Of course they did. Everybody knew what was going on with the Jews. They contradict one another over and over again. Mm-hmm. What they do agree on is that they were all in the Jungvolk. Then at 14, they could all join the Hitler Youth, and they all wanted the uniform. And that they had no choice. We had no choice. You did not disagree. You did not go against. We would have been put into the camps too. No one really takes responsibility. They had to do, you know, they just had to do it. And these were not the Nazi architects. They didn't plan anything. They did not have a seat at the table. These were the flunkies. These were the villagers, the farmers. There is one concentration camp guard in there, and there is one guy. Oh man, there's always that one guy. There is one guy who, he's pretty proud of what he did. The wrong side won that war, according to him, and he's probably the most shocking interview. The final account, it's not a good documentary. It's heavy material, and in other hands, maybe it would have been very effective material. But no, it does not fit together. I'm sure the idea has merit. Let's record the perpetrator's point of view before they all die, because these guys are not just old, they are old. And you're not going to get these interviews any other time. So go ahead, get them on film, but they're just not effective. They're not interesting. I was shocked. I was bored. I was bored stiff watching this documentary.
I was too. No, and that to me was the biggest problem, is I think it was an opportunity lost, because it really, it's incredibly unsettling to watch, because it just sort of reminds you of some things that you've been hearing in modern day, you know, in our own world today. And it's like, all right, have we really not learned all the lessons from the past? And so I wish it had been better, because I think it could have delivered such a timely, powerful message about being brainwashed as, you know, as a party or as a, you know, as a group. And it's just dangerous. And it just reminds you how people get sucked in. And so many of these ones who really wasn't so much about joining the Nazi party, it was about just joining. They were just people who just wanted to be part of something. And so things then just kind of went beyond anyone's control, and things never really would be that bad. It's interesting to see this mix of, the way different people remembered things differently. So again, I wish it had been better, because I think it could have been way, way more powerful and more effective. It needed some narrative structure, and it didn't have one.
All right. Those are the two films that Hannah and I saw in common this week. We went our separate ways for the third films, and you'll understand why, because we each retreated to our own wheelhouses. And if you know us, or you know the films we like, you'll understand once you hear what we have to say. I'll start with probably the bigger film, which is on Netflix right now, and it's called Army of the Dead, directed by Zack Snyder. We have recently talked about Zack Snyder, because he just recut a film that he shot, the four-hour Justice League. But you also know Zack Snyder from 300 and Man of Steel, and he also did a zombie movie called Dawn of the Dead. Remember 2004, Sarah Polley, Ving Rhames, wonderful movie. Well, he's back with zombies. He didn't get it out of his system. We are back with zombies, and this time the zombies are in Vegas, baby. Vegas. Vegas gets taken over by zombies. They take it over. They now own Vegas, which is now surrounded by this wall. Vegas is walled off, and it's just run by zombies. And they're going to nuke it. The United States of America is going to nuke it, and they're going to do it on the 4th of July, because it's all patriotic. But before that happens, Dave Bautista, you know Dave Bautista, he's a former wrestler. He's Drax. And Guardians of the Galaxy. Is it Drax? Mm-hmm. He gets hired by, whatever, a guy to go sneak it back into Vegas, pull an Ocean's 11, go into a casino, go to the basement, open the vault, get all the money, and get out. Shouldn't be that hard, right? Just avoid a couple of zombies. If you run into a couple, shoot them in the head. So Dave Bautista gets a crew. It's full of no-names, but maybe you'll know Tig Notaro. She hops in as the helicopter pilot who's going to fly him out, and a whole bunch of other action no-names. They're just there to be picked off one by one, right? And there's drama. So his daughter's got to come along, and they have issues. Daddy-daughter issues. Mm-hmm. There's a couple people you can't trust, a couple YouTubers who are just in it for the thrills. They all want to sneak in, get their cut, and get out. While the zombies, most of them are just kind of like the Final Cut. Most of them are just flunkies. You know, they're just normal zombies. But there's a handful of alphas. These can actually kind of think, put things together, order troops. They're the guys you got to watch out for. There's a lot of blood. To kill a zombie in this film, you have to do something to their brain. So mostly headshots. Everyone's really good shots, by the way. So shoot them in the head, smash them in the head, do something with the head, zip wire through the neck, whatever you have to do. There's a lot of blood. And so you watched, I heard, the first 2 minutes of this and you quit. You shut it off. You couldn't handle it.
Maybe 8 to 10.
So this is 2.5 hours. It's a half hour too long. There's just a lot of unnecessary drama. If you would have just cut that out and just given us more blood, you would have actually, you know, made the genre people far more happy. But you would have made me more happy, because the other stuff is just unnecessary fluff that doesn't work. You have to be a zombie fan.
Yeah.
For this film. Like, there's no, oh, I'm not a zombie fan, but I'm on the border. No. You gotta like it, because there's circular table saws and everything. It had style. Those first 10 minutes had style. There's this great opening montage of how Vegas gets taken over, and it's wonderful. It's so good. And the soundtrack is great. I've been listening to it today. You know, some Elvis, some Kenny Rogers. There's the acoustic version of the Cranberry Zombie, Hannah. I'm not raving about this film. It's like a 2, 2.5. It's middle of the road. I understand why you cut it off. I get it. I'm not mad at you. I understand why you watched the thing that you watched. I'm glad I watched this, but 2.5 hours is too long. But I'll always take zombie blood over no zombie blood.
Yeah, zombie movies are just not my thing. And so this did nothing for me in that first 10 minutes to lure me in. And after, you know, after the 5th or 6th or 10th or 20th, like, bloody head, you know, blood trauma all over the place on the desert, I was like, you know, 2.5 hours of this? I don't think I can make it. And so, yeah, I chose to watch something that's more in my wheelhouse, which was, and it will should be in most people's wheelhouse, which was Dream Horse, which is in theaters and will be streaming June 11th. So if you don't catch it in the theater, you will be able to catch it next month. But I love sports underdog based on true story movies. And this is a sports underhorse movie based on a true story. And it's inspired by, the story of Dream Alliance. And Dream Alliance was this racehorse that was bred by this small town bartender in Wales, and played by Toni Collette. I love Toni Collette and everything. And she basically has no money, no experience with horses. She convinces her neighbors to all chip in their little meager earnings to help raise Dream Alliance and compete with these racing elites. But, you know, nobody really thinks this horse is going to go anywhere. It cost them like nothing to buy. And, you know, sure enough, you know, this horse rises through the ranks, becomes a champion, and just this beacon of hope in this community that had been suffering from economic hardship. And so it was just, it's very conventional. It's a very conventional sports drama. It's, you know, the Irish indie version of Seabiscuit is how I would kind of view it. You know, it's got this horse has like a less than a 1% chance of ever winning a race, and, you know, he's going to do it anyway. And so a bit slow, very conventional, but a nice, simple feel good movie. And, you know, this horse represents a victory for this whole mining town. And I was reading today, somebody actually had sent, every once in a while we get these emails with the soundtracks from these different movies, and the composers and the people behind the music choices were talking about how the music was divided into two different things, that the music that was chosen for the beginning, when you're just kind of meeting these characters and learning about this, the South Wales village. And then the transition of the music to when things are becoming much more uplifting. And so it actually made me think more about, you know, really paying more attention to how the music is used in a lot of these films. So not as much fun, I'm sure, as as the soundtrack from Army of the Dead. But you know, Dream Horse is actually based on a true story. You don't really have zombies running around everywhere, but you do have the horse racing season that's going on right now. And so I think the timing of getting people interested in a underdog horse racing movie right around the time when we just had the Preakness and we're going to have the Belmont Stakes coming up. And so I think I first saw this movie, it was about a year ago, at least maybe over a year ago. And so it's just finally rolling out. And so I had to sort of go back and look at my notes as to what I thought about it when I first saw it, like last March. And Damian Lewis is in it from Homeland and Billions. And so I can watch him and I can watch Toni Collette in just about anything. They don't have much room to stretch here, but she certainly makes the mundane way more watchable. And so I think if you're into those sports dramas, you're not going to be disappointed. It's not going to be one of those ones that sort of goes into your list of sports underdog classic films to watch. But it's just a family-friendly, feel-good sports drama. So I enjoyed it. I didn't absolutely love, love, love it, but it was decent.
There is a connection between your film and mine. There's a zombie horse that shows up in Army of the Dead. Someone bit the horse and he is a zombie horse. There's also a zombie tiger. I think it's one of Siegfried and Roy's. So there's animals. Uh-huh. And, you know, he's an underdog zombie horse.
Yeah.
In film news, pre-COVID, there was this huge announcement of Keanu projects, and it was supposed to be today, May 21st, 2021. We were supposed to get a double feature this weekend of John Wick 4 and The Matrix 4. They were supposed to be released today. Man, I feel like I'm missing out. I would have loved to have seen both John Wick 4 and Matrix 4 this weekend. And your boy, Henry Cavill, he just got hired to do something. He's rebooting something. What is he rebooting?
He's rebooting Highlander. And I never saw the first movie and I never saw the series, but I'm familiar enough with it. And I saw the headlines flashing around today about his casting, but they're not really saying exactly what role he'd be playing. I'm all for Henry Cavill in the Scottish Highlands versus in his red tights. So we'll see.
I can't believe you've never seen Highlander. Like, I never liked any of the films, and there are like four or five of them. I loved Highlander, the series with Adrian Paul as Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. It was so good. I was that prime preteen, early teenager phase when that came out. I was all aboard Highlander. I love Highlander. There can be only one. That means nothing to you, right? There can be only one.
No, it means nothing to me, but I do remember that it was a very popular watch, but I just, I must have been, you know, being a few years older than you, I think I just somehow missed watching that one, but I'm perfectly content with that casting, and it's a weird Memorial Day, going into the Memorial Day weekend, where we don't have those huge, huge tent poles that we normally would. It's like, we're going to get Cruella, you know, the family-friendly Disney flick, her origin story. But we're not getting the John Wicks and the Matrixes and the things that would...
No, you're getting really A Quiet Place too.
And A Quiet Place 2 is coming out, but... And that does seem like one we, based on the first one, you really need to see in a theater to appreciate. And so maybe as people are trickling back into theaters, I'm okay with not getting the really, really, really big ones until I'm more comfortable being in the theater, because I don't want to see John Wick on the small screen, and I don't want to see The Matrix on a small screen. I want your big theater experience for those. And so I'm going to be curious to see how those do as they start eventually rolling out. And the big musicals are rolling out too. So In the Heights will be coming out in a few weeks. And so that one's getting really good buzz. Looking forward to that. So we'll see. But I think with Henry Cavill and the Highlander movie, it sounds like we've got a little ways to go before that one is actually shot, edited, distributed.
You just gave me a great idea. I've got it. Our screenplay, zombie musical. Come on.
Didn't they already do that last year? Like Anna and the Apocalypse something or other?
Oh, you're right. That was good too. Zombie. They've already done it. Oh, dang it. I thought I was onto something. Anna and the Apocalypse is a great film, people.
So that one I can watch. Army of the Dead, not so much. But so you got something for everybody. Before we wrap out, just want to say, end with a bit of housekeeping. Congratulations, Joelle and Rivoli and Brett Sonnenschein. They are the winners of our Cinema Clash giveaway. Blu-ray copies of The Courier are on their way to you. And so, reminder, you got to be in it to win it, just like the vaccination lottery here in Maryland. Charlie, fingers crossed for that. Next week, Memorial Day weekend, we'll churn something out if we can. In the meantime, stay safe, wear a mask if still not vaccinated, and get ready for a hot summer at the movies.
Thank you.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.